Coming up on today's edition of Women and Money, the shit we don't talk about, our guest is Ed Combs, a therapy-informed financial planner at Healthy Love and Money.
So Ed offers such a unique focus on financial planning. Not only is he a certified financial planner, but he's also a certified financial therapist and a licensed marriage and family therapist associate.
What is so neat about Ed's approach is because we see so many marriages fall apart or have a lot of conflict due to money issues, it's great to kind of have his expertise to come in here and help us solve some of these things that we don't typically talk about.
For sure. And Ed helps women, like we all do at Purse Strings, feel confident to partner with their intimate partner to be seen as equal. And by doing that, it then restores intimacy and connection in the relationship. And it models healthy love and money for the next generation, which is just so important. I mean, we hear so much about poor money messages and poor money behaviors because positive money behaviors weren't really modeled. And so this is what you're doing is super cool.
Yep. So let's just dive in and learn more.
Gloria Steinem once said, "We will never solve the feminization of power until we solve the masculinity of wealth." Barbara Provost and Maggie Nielsen are the team at Purse Strings that will help you navigate the ins and outs of financial independence so that you can be financially fearless. This is Women and Money, the shit we don't talk about.
So hi, Ed. We are so glad you joined us today. Before we jump in, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do with the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, Maggie and Dr. Barb, thank you so much for having me on today. I'm thrilled to be here. And, you know, we're in an incredible time in history. People may not feel that, but I feel it every day because I'm talking to more and more people that are saying, yeah, we want to figure out how to talk about money together as a couple. And I'm not the only one that's advocating for this. There's a growing community of people that are saying, it's not the man's job to manage the household finances. It's not the woman's job. And if you're in a homosexual relationship, it's not one person or the other. Money management is not unique to gender.
Thank you.
It's not unique to a particular gender or gender identity, right? But we've had a gazillion messages that men should do, and you fill in your blanks, and women should do with money, and you fill in your blanks. And I assure you, if we compared our blanks, there would be some overlap, but there might be some differences. And that's where the real confusion comes into play. So one of my biggest encouragements, let's stop using gender as the explanation for who should do what with money. It's the wrong variable. If you're a human, you should be doing money. However you identify as a human. Okay, so I just went on, like I got on the pulpit here and went preaching instead of introducing myself. I apologize.
Love it.
I'm fired up about this, but
you got to set the tone. I love it.
Okay, so now let's rewind the tape just a minute and say, well, who the heck is this guy that just steps on the soapbox here and goes into it? I started my professional life as a firefighter at 19 years old. And I really, you know, young and naive, like most 19-year-olds, I wanted to save the world. And I was going to do it through firefighting. But what I found out sitting around the firehouse is I didn't really actually want to save the world from burning down buildings. That's actually kind of scary work.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of riding a big red truck is a lot of fun. A lot of the time is not running into burning buildings. A lot of the time is spent sitting at the firehouse, sitting around. And so when you, And let's talk about gender. The firehouse was about 98% men. Mm-hmm. So you have men sitting around talking about their lives and their wives and money. And, you know, what can you probably infer is the conversations were probably tilted to the negative side of things, the critical side of things, the I'm not going to show her my side job money kind of things, the why is she spending so much money? It's making me crazy. The we've got to file for bankruptcy papers all over the firehouse table trying to figure it out. So, you know, I'm sitting in the firehouse getting all these different money experiences, and to some extent, it reminded me of my own family. It had a different flavor to it, the conversations, but there was friction around how money and time was being spent. So, how do I solve this problem? We had this wonderful guy come by doing investments for the firefighters. And so he started to talk about investments, and he seemed pretty nice. And I was like, he's driving a Lexus. I am not driving a Lexus. He's wearing fancy pants. I am wearing fancy pants that are not fancy. I think I want to go in that direction. And so, you know, my world just started opening up as I read more and more personal finance books. And I read Dave Ramsey and Susie Orman and David Bach and How to Think and Grow Rich. And, you know, all those great books that a lot of people are the kind of the first entry into personal development and personal finance. And so I got this really clear idea that helping people with money is a great thing, that I could make a lot of money at it. And it was going to be pretty simple. Just follow the formula. Whichever one of the formulas from whichever one of the books I had read.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what that key magic formula is if you've got it?
Yeah, well, that's where I'm still working. Now I have my own formula that I like to share. But what I like to do is actually paint a little context and say, it's a formula, not the formula, because there is no magical, perfect one formula for doing this money thing. But that's now after 17 years post leaving the fire service, going and getting my CFP, getting my MBA, working at Vanguard Mutual Funds, working with lots of clients, hundreds and hundreds of conversations about money and investing. And, you know, one of my first experiences when I got a promotion, I got to work with the $1 million clients.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yes, it was a woo, and my heart kind of palpitated because there was this specialness about $1 million clients. At the end of the day, I learned they're humans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I had all these kind of crazy ideas about what they were going to be like. And most of them were like kind of afraid, like they might judge me or think I'm stupid or not know what I'm doing or be critical of me. Where did that come from? Well, I rode through it. And then I was realizing, well, there's more to this than just telling them, like, here's the right investment allocation and pick this mutual fund and blah, 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 blah. So I wanted to figure out, well, how do I help people? And one of my colleagues was going back to school to be a therapist. And I was like, whoa, what's that? Yes, I know it seems weird that I did not know what a therapist was, but this was 10 years ago and I did not fully.
Wow.
Now, mind you, I had been to therapist, but the dots, I don't know. This is me. Long story short, I went back to school to become a therapist to figure out how do I actually help people. Therapists know how people work. And boy, did I get more than I bargained for, studying human psychology and then how do you help people that are in pain and psychological distress heal from the wide spectrum of mental health diagnoses and relationship distress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I spent the last 8 or 9 years really deep asking how do we bring mental health therapy skills and knowledge into people's financial lives and integrating this. And so that's really why I'm so passionate about this, is hundreds, if not thousands of conversations across many years in many different contexts. I mean, I had a short stint between Vanguard and Therapy World where I went to the Philippines for 3 months and worked in microfinance lending with women.
Wow.
It was an incredible experience, but it left me with this question. It's like, great, we're empowering women around money, but where are the men in the conversation? How does this set up the dynamic, right? So our whole gender, and yeah, I mean, you guys have taught me so much about the money messages that women have learned. And man, because I'm not a woman, I literally did not hear a lot of them because they weren't for me. And I do think to some extent that there's almost a little bit of a reverse, is women don't always know all the money messages men have internalized fully because they haven't lived as a male, right? But our genders kind of cause us to screen things in for us and screen things out. So there's a lot there. I'll stop on my long introduction.
I just think this is so interesting, all the transitions you've made and how it's really, you know, it's not like one day you're like, I want to be a financial therapist, but it's really built into that by finding the need and, you know, following your curiosity along the way. And some of this, you know, we talk a lot about women and the money messages, but I also hear it now, you know, from a lot of men, how if they're not the sole provider, it kind of goes against their money message of like, this was the role they were supposed to take. This is your duty. You know, you can't have kids, so you're the breadwinner. And so it really does go both ways. And so I'm glad we're kind of having this conversation of how can we meet in the middle and take our roles as both, you know, partners as partners instead of his duties and her duties.
Maggie, you hit the nail on the head, and I didn't say this explicitly, but that is probably one of the single largest reasons why I'm a financial therapist, is because my value system fully supports women in the workplace at the highest levels, right? It has from the very beginning of my life. I grew up on the West Coast, San Francisco area. So yes, grew up in a liberal environment. I lived in Houston, Texas. This is also a deep part of my story. Very conservative environment. That confused my young brain to no end. I mean, I knew that these things existed, but I just couldn't reconcile it. So I've been trying to figure that all out. But I met my wife. I was a firefighter. She was finishing dental school. So we have this gender piece where she's going to make a lot more than me. And initially that's exciting to her and to me. But then the reality of living in that, my brain was doing some tricks on me. It still does from time to time. And so, yes, we need to have these opening conversations and lead with empathy and curiosity and compassion about the experiences, because it's so easy to be judgmental about money topics in all directions.
Tell me your approach to financial planning, because it's so unique. I mean, when people come and talk to you, Ed, I'm imagining that it's quite a different conversation than if they were to go to the more conventional, if you will, financial planner. Yeah. So how do you approach financial planning in this way?
Well, I think there's a lot there, but I think one of the most tangible things that people could connect to is in the first meeting, before they're even a client, the first thing I'm doing is not asking about their money. I'm asking about mm-hmm. who's in their family. And I'm literally drawing on my piece of paper a family tree. And I want to know, you know, mom and dad, step-parents, brothers, sisters, half-siblings, children that you have. Because this is what we call in family therapy, your family system. And all of us mm-hmm. live in some family system. Now, why am I doing that? Well, because these are the people that you're making financial decisions for most often. And you're also mm-hmm. most influenced by, have been influenced by, and will continue to be influenced by. So if mm-hmm. I don't know who's in your social system that's of great significance, it's going to be hard to develop a really effective financial plan for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the very beginning, is really understanding who's in your system. Then the next layer we start to layer in once we know the people is, what kind of money experiences have you seen with these different people? What did you see mom mm-hmm. and dad do? What did you see step-parent do? What kind of family events happened? What kind of money experiences? And that's where the painful money experiences really start to show up. And that's what's holding most of us back from moving forward and feeling financially confident. So even once we know how to budget, we execute a budget, once we get the investments going, we have the investments going, we may still have pretty profound financial anxiety. We may have pretty mm-hmm. profound financial shame. And that's tied into these relational experiences that we've had in our families and may be continuing to have.
I think that's so interesting, as I think about, you know, I don't have a partner, but if I had a partner, you know, I don't always ask them about their parents and the money stories that, you know, their parents told them, and dive into that just as a conversation we have. So that's like a new conversation that you're really bringing to light. That's probably not something people have a lot of, like, how did your stepmom talk to you about money? You know, it's like, oh, I don't know. She was there when I was 15, but that could still make a real big impact on your life. And sometimes those are not questions that we always ask our partners or think are necessary to ask. So you starting with this family tree, bringing the partners together and understanding each other's stories is really interesting. And I think you learn a lot about your clients, but I think the clients, the partners will learn a lot about each other as well.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's about the clients and helping them know and understand themselves more fully. And oftentimes this experience increases compassion between partners. So when they come to me, there's some level of frustration, resentment, disappointment. For very understandable reasons, right? As humans, when we don't meet each other's expectations, we experience frustration, resentment, and anger. Like, that's just the way it goes as humans. But if we can contextualize or see a bigger picture for what's doing this, and that they're not this evil, horrid, wretched person, but they're actually a human who's lived through some very legitimate experiences that are still coloring the way they're showing up, it reframes it. And the thing is, the way I think most relationships go and develop is, you hear this story here one time, you hear this story, this other story another time, then you hear, and so you kind of have this constellation, and a lot of times it's not like, oh, I've never heard that before, but the way I ask it, it creates a coherent narrative, or there's this through line, right? And so it's no longer this fragmented mm-hmm. experience here, here, and here. It's like, oh, there's this through line of money distress.
And I'm sure you get them looking at each other like, what? Like they're learning things about each other they never realized, right? Because they never had these conversations.
That's right. I think one of my more recent favorite stories of this is a wonderful couple, been together for 20 plus years. They've got three kids, kind of getting close to college, the first one. They both share the same religious and cultural background, the same immigrant story. But when I ask them the stories of their family's journeys with money, they're like, wait, what? Really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I didn't really understand that. Wow. Okay. Like and usually they're unsettled by this. Like there's, you know, it's like.
Yeah, it's new learning about somebody they should have known, right?
Well, I'm sensitive to the should have known because no one's teaching us how to.
You thought you might have known, you know, after knowing them for 20 years, you know.
But yeah. Like, if no one's taught you to ask these types of questions.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have known to ask these types of questions, right? And so, right. Like, I had to become a therapist to learn to ask these types of questions and that these types of questions are actually important. Because otherwise I could say, hey, Maggie, let's sit down and do your budget. And she's like, okay, great, let's do it. And then we walk through the budget thing. And then 2 weeks later, she doesn't call back and she's not doing the budget. And I'm like, well, what happened? Oh, well, if I learned that she actually felt some shame about budgeting and that as soon as she started to look at her numbers, she felt bad about herself. Oh, well, yeah, I wouldn't want to come back and talk to me either. Right? Like, stepping onto our budget is a lot like stepping on the scale for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
It sets off this cascade of negative thoughts and feelings and sensations in our body, right? How many people step on the scale and light up and be like, yes, today my body is beautiful.
We all should do that.
That would be a wonderful thing, right? But the reality is more often than not, it's like, am I going to be excited or disappointed? Excited or disappointed? Step on. Mm-hmm. Ooh, not as bad as I thought, mm-hmm. but not good. Okay. Maybe tomorrow will be better, right? And that's mm-hmm. kind of, I think, how money goes for a lot of us too, is we kind of play the shell game in our head with that.
Yeah, that's a great analogy for women especially because it's just complicated and compounded by so many awful feelings and thoughts and messages and ideals that we just cannot uphold.
I think it's so interesting, this example you did of this couple who've been together for 20 years. And so I just feel like, you know, we've raised kids, we've maybe bought a house or whatever it may be. Yeah. We've done so many financial things together. Why now are they coming to talk to a financial therapist and kind of get things going? I mean, keep it as private as possible, but, you know, just like, you know, what's that impetus of after 20 years, let's actually go have a conversation about this?
Protecting their identity, but what I'll say is some part of what they've been doing is not working, and often there's mm-hmm. a disclosure. So part of the problem is oftentimes one partner is responsible for one part of the household finances, and the other partner is responsible for other parts, and they don't talk fully, so they don't really know the whole picture. Mm-hmm. But then one partner gets into a little bit of financial trouble, like not paying estimated taxes for their business or for their partner's mm-hmm. business. And then the lovely IRS letter shows up that says, you're delinquent. What's this, honey? I thought you were paying the taxes. Well, I'm sorry. And it was not malicious, but it was, and this is the compounded complexity of it, is like, I've learned that it's not okay to come and talk to you about money because every time I do, you either shut down or blow up. Right? Those are the two directions that we go as humans. We either shut down or we blow up. That's connected directly to our physiology. Most of us know fight and flight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Blow up, shut down. We don't stay regulated. Like, we're having a nice conversation right now. We're all probably pretty emotionally regulated. I don't think either of you are ready to.
We like to pretend.
you're actually, oh, I thought those were daggers in your eyes. Actually, like, I'm ready to rip Ed's head off. I can't believe he's, no. But, you know, so we teach our partners what we'll talk about or not talk about with money, kind of unconsciously and implicitly, not directly. We don't say, I don't want to talk about that because it makes me feel uncomfortable, honey. We just don't talk about it. Or we blow up every time mm-hmm. that they bring up the issue.
Right.
And because we're needing to manage the flow of money through our household, if our partner, we can't talk to them about the flow of money through our household and we're getting behind on the bills, now we're really stuck. So now what do we do? So the problems manifest and get bigger and bigger and heavier. And then sometime at some point it finally blows up. And, you know, mm-hmm. look, the reality is the word combination financial therapy has only been around for 10 to 15 years, depending on who you ask.
Wow. I didn't even think it would be that long.
And so the certification to be a financial therapist has only been around about 3 years right now.
Mm-hmm.
So from a field of practice and understanding, very young, right? Mm-hmm. The field of therapy is about 100 years old. The field of couples therapy is only about 20 to 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The field of financial therapy, like formalized, is 15 years, 10 years, somewhere in that range, right? So
yeah.
Now that's not to say that people have not been writing about psychology and money and meaning and philosophy for long before that. There are books that are written kind of trying to piece this together, but there's not been a formal place for people to go learn how do I take psychological concepts and more specifically therapeutic concepts to use to help people to feel a greater sense of financial well-being.
Purse Strings offers an available for hire network of vetted professionals who specialize in serving women. When you have a life event that has suddenly made money a priority, you can now move forward with a whole new confidence that you're getting advice and services from savvy professionals who are uniquely equipped to serve your needs. Go to pursestrings.co and use our directory of handpicked financial professionals when you're ready to plan for retirement, navigate divorce, buy your next home, fire up your new business, and more. Go to pursestrings.co or check the link in the show notes. Now you can be financially fearless.
So give us some success stories. Like you were talking about that one couple. How do you know when you've reached success with a couple? Like what does that look like?
That's a great question. And the nice thing about this work is that success is not a binary black or white. Success is a progressive journey for most of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So success for one couple recently was she's excited to actually talk with her husband about her money.
Mm-hmm.
The next step of success was they actually looked each other in the eyes while they were talking about it and realized, I'm safe now. Tears.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had internalized, it's not safe to talk about money.
Mm.
Right. So we're creating a corrective experience in her mind brain that it's actually safe now. Right now, there is certainly assessment on my part that the partner is actually safe, so I'm not just setting her up into trouble.
Right.
Because I do want to be mindful that there are relationships where domestic violence is very real and is a significant factor in financial control and manipulation. And partners in that stage of despair are not suited for financial therapy.
Agree. I would agree with that.
They need to be into regular general therapy and get to some base level of relational safety or security or separation. Mm-hmm. That's got to be sorted out. Financial therapy needs to be done in the context of a safe enough relationship.
Right.
Because if we don't have foundational psychological safety, the financial stuff, forget it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that point to light because it's not... You can't make every situation perfect again. Sometimes it's just not the right fit, or you need different resources. But you know, there's so much just of a relationship change and mind change about how you talk about money and just gaining that trust with your partner. That's so much more than just like we got our emergency savings filled. You know, it's like this is a priceless thing that's just going to keep growing and getting stronger. And so I feel like, you know, we always say you got to really break those money barriers down before you really grow. And that's really what that's doing, is really getting that emotional foundation and trust so you can become that team.
Yeah, absolutely. And it that's why, you know, I want to frame it as it's this progressive journey. It's like, when are you strong enough? Is it when you can do 2 bicep curls, 10 bicep curls, 3 sets of 10? 3 sets of 10 with 20 pounds? We all get to kind of decide, and we get to decide how much further we want to go with it. So that's also something that's so important that I talk about and am thinking about with my clients is agency.
Mm-hmm.
how far do you want to go with this? How close and comfortable do you want to get with your partner? Right. My assumption is that because financial intimacy to some degree is infinite, right? That you're never fully done knowing yourself or your partner and your finances, in part because we're changing over the course of our life. Mm-hmm. Maggie, what did you want when you were 20 financially? Do you remember?
Just to have money to pay my bills at that point. I mean, that's in college when like ramen's the main meal and any free meal is great. So like it was a hustle time.
And is that what you still want now?
No, I've got much bigger goals right now, which is awesome to have.
Barb, how about for you when you were 30? What did you want financially? What was...
I was just still working importance? Through school, right? Getting things done. And yeah, totally different place in my life. I didn't even have children at that point. So it was really all about building my career, my educational foundation and all of that.
Right. So our wants, needs, and desires evolve with us over time. And that's part of staying current with our spouse is if we're not understanding what our current wants, dreams, and desires are, then we may not be adjusting our spending to meet that.
Right.
And this is where people become, and I'll use kind of trauma-focused language, people will become frozen in time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll remember that time of financial destitution, and they'll continue to apply it 10 years later, 20 years later. That's a trauma response. You've not allowed your brain and body to recognize, I'm actually safe now, assuming you are safe now, you are out of that time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's, we know we have major cultural events that left large groups of people frozen in time as if there's no resources available.
Yes. Yep. It's scary, right? For people.
It is scary. And so the question becomes, how do we help the brain, the body recognize the fear has passed? The threat is gone now. And financial strain can be chronic for prolonged periods of time, which makes it harder to know that you're safe now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I still struggle with, there's still the influence of being active, ready to respond to anybody at any time from being 5 years of a firefighter.
Wow.
Right. Like there's still parts of me that have this level of hypervigilance, like just ready to jump into action and to respond to anybody that calls for help. Because that's the rule in firefighting is you don't pick which calls you're going to go. Nope, not going to that house fire today. I'll maybe tomorrow. Mm-hmm. No, you're going to all of it. So our brains do remember these experiences, and that's why taking the time to reflect and try to help the memories relax and go to ease is so important.
And we do get in that fight or flight mode when it feels like we're at those extremes. And, you know, it's not like that human instinct that we need anymore, like an animal's chasing us. You know, it's like we don't need to be that extreme. So it's almost coming down from there, because when we get to those high points, it's our human animalistic self coming out, you know. And so it's like we got to calm that. Like no one's getting chased by a bear. No one's, you know, getting, you know, attacked right now. It's just money. It's just a tool. Like, let's bring it down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of those things that's interesting that I've learned and continue to learn more about how it is that we're wired up as humans is that those painful experiences are encoded in parts of our brain that are not connected to time. Like, so that's why we can be frozen in time. Like the fear gets activated as if it's still happening today, but it was 20 years ago. It's because that fear is encoded in our mind, brain, and body, disconnected from the fact that time has moved forward. So this is why we hear this phrase, well, just get over it or just move on, is not possible. There are therapeutic practices that we can do, though, to help the emotional and body memories bring arousal to that sensation and then communicate that the threat has passed. Breathing exercises are one of them, right? There's EMDR therapy is a trauma-focused therapy. That's another one. There's lots of different practices. So what I want to share, though, is you can't just think yourself out of this stuff. Right? Our nervous system will override our positive thinking very quickly. So
interesting.
Yeah. So if you're feeling stuck and you've done a lot of the brain mindset type work and it's not helping you move forward, it's time to shift the focus down into your body and learn and start developing some body-based exercises to help you bring back into regulation and safety.
Wonderful. So, Ed, tell us like the type of clients that you love to work with. Typically, who would search out and use your services as a financial therapist?
You know, this is, you know, hard for me. I will describe this, but I want to provide a little context. I'm a recovering people pleaser, and I want to, remember, I think I said earlier, I want to save the world, right?
Like, yeah.
That still lives on inside of me. So I want to help everyone. Now, you guys are in business. I'm in business. Probably a lot of people listening realize most of us can't help everyone, mm-hmm. right? And so the people that I feel like really resonate with where I'm at and what I'm offering are typically relatively high income couples, meaning they've crossed over six figures.
Mm-hmm.
They're on this journey of figuring out how to build wealth, but the car's rattling, if you will. The wheels are wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're into their mid-40s. They've got a few kids. They've got a house. They've got aging parents. Maybe a parent's passed. And they're looking at themselves like, yeah, I'm not going to work forever. Like that reality is starting to set in a way it doesn't at 25.
Right.
But they're also realizing, like, I don't know how I'm going to get to 60, 65 and have enough resources to be okay. I don't know how to get my partner on track with me. I'm feeling overwhelmed. What do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready for someone that can really just come alongside them and meet with them on a regular, ongoing basis, that they don't want to be preached at. They don't want to be shamed. They don't want to be told everything to do. They do want some guidance, but they also want some of their own authority and autonomy in making decisions that feel good for them.
So you're actually providing two services, financial therapy and your CPA. So how do you go about charging your clients?
Oh, that's a great question. So I'm providing an integrated service for my clients. So I worked for a number of years as a full-time therapist on just doing the therapy side, but I didn't have real access to doing the financial planning side of things. And so what I realized is, like, I want to be able to touch and get into more of the household spending, the investments, their taxes, their estate planning needs, insurance needs, right? Those are all important education funding. Those are all the major planning pieces. And so now I have a comprehensive process where I just walk people through each of the phases of those, help them navigate any of the different thoughts, feelings, behaviors, relationship dynamics that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So they can have a solid plan in place. And really, you know, I was talking with a colleague earlier today and we're joking. I said, oh, part of what I do is I just help people create a financial inventory. Because the way most of us live our financial life is this week I picked up this insurance policy. Over here, I picked up this insurance, this investment product. Over here, I started doing this cash thing. Mm-hmm. Over here, I did this tax thing. But is it really all working together? So it's kind of like going to your grandma's house that just is kind of disheveled and eclectic.
Yeah.
Instead of like going to the designer showroom where it's like, oh, this makes sense. Look, I know grandma's, you know, living
room. We love her living room.
So I'm not throwing a dish at grandma. I love you, grandma. But, you know, it's just like we're trying to create a coherent approach to the way you're doing money. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that's so exciting.
Yeah, I think you really do pull that full comprehensive plan, not just of your finances, but of kind of that money mindset and your relationship and everything else, really tying it together with a nice little bow, which is awesome. And really making sure we're working with our finances well and our finances are working for us well, that we can really use that tool to our best ability. So I know we touched on a lot today. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure is shared, or any tips and tricks before we end here?
If you're in an intimate partnership, I'd invite you to try an exercise. Don't blindside your partner with this. Do not blindside them. Please do not blindside them. But say, hey, I was listening to this great podcast with Dr. Barb and Maggie about money and financial intimacy. And just share, I want to share this word financial intimacy with you and see what you think about it. And if they respond favorably, then say, what I'd like to do is just for us to sit knee to knee and look each other in the eyes and just have a moment of connection and commitment to, we're going to work on figuring out our finances. Now I realize that might be a huge ask for a lot of folks,
mm-hmm.
but I'm painting a picture of where you can go, right? Because what most of us have never seen in our family or in the media is financial intimacy. And That experience of financial intimacy is really being able to look your partner in the eye and feel a sense of safety and connection, and that we're in this together, and that we'll figure out whatever the financial hurdles we need to jump. Right. So that's kind of the big message, invitation, exercise, and hopefully hope, but maybe causing you to shake in your boots a little bit.
Yeah. I'm excited. That's a great exercise for everyone just to try out. Barb, you're going to have to report back to us how it goes for you.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I definitely will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's just a great way to get the conversation started. As we always say, you know, just take one small little step. It doesn't need to be huge change today. And so just looking your partner in the eyes and kind of opening up that conversation is just a huge, great first step that you can make. That's still just, it's free. It's still a little step, you know, but like, it's just something to get the conversation going, you know, open up these doors. And it doesn't always have to be these dramatic things, but this is great. This is a great exercise for people to kind of open up that conversation. All right. Well, Ed, we thank you for coming on today and sharing your expertise. Everyone, you know, Ed is one of our Pershing's approved professionals, so you could reach out to him on our site, pershings.co. He also has his own podcast, the Healthy Love and Money Podcast. And your book is also called Healthy Love and Money, correct?
That's correct. The Healthy Love and Money Way. Yep.
Okay, cool. So he's got a book too. I know you're all over social media, Healthy Love and Money. And so feel free to reach out to Ed, you know, get these conversations started, maybe grab his book, and just take some action today and share this with a friend, as we all need to keep talking about this shit. Talk to everyone again soon.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.